afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Wednesday, February 6th, 2019. Hey, Dave, tell us what day it is.
Hey, happy hump day, Melody.
Oh, and same to you, too. I thought I'd get you on that one. And welcome to the program. We've got Wendy Wilson joining us today, and she does each Wednesday, and she always brings us some great, great information. But first, let's go ahead and get to the gold and silver prices for February 6, 2019. Gold, a little pressure in gold today, 880 to the downside at 1307. Let's hope she can keep that 1300 level. Silver down 18 cents at 1574. Platinum was down 13 points at 809. And palladium was down $9 at $1,377. The USDX today, stronger. That's why we have pressure. Up 0.33 at 96.37. Crude oil was up 29 cents at 53.95. And the paper markets today, quiet day. The Dow was down 21 points. 25,390. The NASDAQ was down 26 at 7,375. And the S&P was down 6, 2,731. 10-year yield, 2.70%. Let's see what else is going on. If there's anything else worth mentioning, a strange day. Emotion driving the markets getting stronger. We're at 65 into the greed territory. And it truly is amazing. December, it was down in the 4 and 5 numbers. And what has really changed? What has really changed from December to the first part of February? Not a whole lot, except it's a new year and more money being funneled into those stock buybacks. But hey. It's just another day in a, you know, in the same old world of manipulation. And but anyway, that's another day, another topic. And we have Wendy Wilson joining us from Apothecary Herbs. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melody, and hello, Dave.
Hey there, Wendy.
Well, we're going to talk about some what the drug companies are doing. They're exploiting an FDA loophole, and it may be putting our supplements at risk. So I need everybody to pay attention. It's a real time-sensitive report. What the drug companies are doing is they're taking nutritional elements, they're exploiting them through this red tape loophole, and they change the supplement to a drug, and then file a report with the FDA to ban that supplement from the market. Now, I did report previously on the pharmaceutical industry. They were dissecting the nutrients in foods and spices and herbs in order to control those elements, but at the time, we couldn't determine how they were going to do that. But we're going to take a look at what's developing and what is setting really a dangerous precedent, which could mean the cost and availability of your supplements can drastically change. All right, so the FDA companies have made drug copycats of about 10 nutrients, and they have filed documents with the FDA that the nutrient is now really a drug requiring FDA oversight and regulation. So if the identified nutrient is then present in a natural source supplement on the market, the FDA is now classified that supplement as a drug and is removing it from the market. So this is really how the drug companies are removing competition from the supplement industry and taking over that marketplace. Now, according to Jonathan Landsman of Natural Health 365, he said the drug companies recently pushed vitamin B6, your pyridoxinol or doxamine, into the drug category. So the importance of garnishing the rights to vitamin B6 and all supplements is because the human body needs vitamin B6. And this is why. You need vitamin B6 for metabolic function in order to produce energy and regulate your mood. You need vitamin B6 to help the body make niacin and tryptophan. Also, vitamin B6 helps your digestive system extract protein from your food, convert it to energy sources for your cells, And also the nutrient is widely used by your body as a necessity to regulate reproductive functions like hormones and even during pregnancy. Also, vitamin B6 helps prevent neurological problems, and it does a whole lot more. So the drug companies want control over vitamin B6. Here's a quote, again, from Natural Health. They say, the FDA back channel is allowing drug companies to start investigations on nutrient for use in drug manufacture before the supplement companies can file a notification. So the drug company then can request the FDA to remove that supplement version from the market. For instance, in 1997, Emirates Medical, they filed an application regarding an amino acid called L-glutamine, and this helps your body digestion, blood sugar control, brain function, weight management, muscle strength, and also helps with detoxing your system. So now any supplement that claims it contains this amino acid as an ingredient, the FDA has to remove and prohibit it from sale if it's in the supplement area. So then the drug companies then can market any product with that ingredient, and guess what they can do now? Since it's a drug, they can charge drug prices. So your supplement that was once $10 a month could become regulated drugs and become $40,000 a year.
Good grief.
And actually that amino acid, that's what they did to it, and the drug version is called Enderi. So Natural Health is also pointing out that this principle of using this back channel can be used against any supplement or vitamin or mineral or even CBD oil that has just been, you know, approved for sale. The Alliance for Natural Health has also posted a feedback page to notify, if you want to notify the FDA. The FDA is taking public opinion, apparently. So this is your opportunity to voice your opinion. This hot link goes out in the newsletter, by the way, to your newsletter subscribers, Melanie, so they can just click it and then fill it out. So this is your petition to let them know, hey, you know, this back channel loophole is really not a good idea. So if we take a look at the FDA, how they describe this whole process, it's right on their website, where they're saying Big Pharma can really abscond with your right to have natural elements. Here's what they're saying, quote, the FDA's role in the development of a new drug begins when the drug sponsor or manufacturer or marketer, also known as drug company, has screened the new molecule for pharmaceutical activity and toxicity potential for animals and also man, and wants to test its diagnostic or therapeutic potential. And at this point, the molecule's legal status just poof changes to a vitamin food source, to a new drug, and is subject to the requirements of drug regulation, end of quote. So that's just how easy it is.
That is really amazing.
Well, you know, a lot of people ask me, well, what about the grandfather clause, you know? Typically, the FDA has operated under and has respected the grandfather clause for supplement ingredients that have been on the market since 1994. So, but investigators have heard that there may be some backpedaling by the FDA on this. According to Nutra Ingredients USA, the Council for Responsible Nutrition said the grandfather clause may not be the barrier it once was. So what the drug companies may be applying some pressure to the FDA to not honor the clause. Something about their functioning list was not agreed upon, you know, some sort of, you know, obscure little excuse. And if you'll recall, the grandfather clause appeared in 1994 with your Dietary Supplements and Health Education Act to protect your supplement market. So according to the Council for Responsible Nutrition, the FDA is saying that some nutrients were not adequately presented by the health industry in 1994, and thus their previous marketing protections essentially have vaporized. So the FDA is demanding, get this, extensive evidence supporting ingredients and the marketing of the dietary supplement that includes that particular category of ingredient. They want catalogs that advertise the product, business records, and all other information from more than 15 years ago.
That's nuts.
Well, no company holds on to stuff probably more than 10 years, you know? So if you want to still be grandfathered, they're changing the rules again. on how you can get under the grandfather clause, because obviously they're saying documentation in 94 wasn't sufficient. So your Biden, get this now, potentially think about the bigger picture. If they're going to call vitamin B6 a drug, what foods that you eat right now have vitamin B6 in them? And they could change, you know, the availability of foods even if they want to. Your grass-fed beef is on the list. Your grains, turkey, a lot of seafood like salmon, tuna, swordfish, mackerel, herring, haddock, and halibut, potatoes, pork, figs and prunes, chicken, carrots, bananas, avocados, tomatoes, sweet potatoes, lentils and beans, acorn, squash. I mean, the list is kind of long for your vitamin B6. So, Andrew Show, he's a physician with, and he's the vice president of the Scientific and Regulatory Affairs Council for Responsible Nutrition. This is what he says. He says, pyridoxine, or your vitamin B6, is equivocally a dietary ingredient because it's one of the three primary natural forms of vitamin B6, and it's one of the two predominant forms in animal products used as human foods. End of quote. So there's this thinking, if you're rational about it, if they're going to call your vitamin B6 a drug, then what are they going to do with the foods that contain it? See?
You know, it's interesting. I don't know. This doesn't have anything. It might come into play here, but when you talk about the foods and how are they going to handle, you know, the distribution of foods, I can remember, oh, my gosh, when the diet foods became popular to where they would ship them out to various to people who sign up, and you can get your food and everything delivered to you. I remember DV Kidd, you know, she's a column, she writes a lot of columns. She's been on a lot of radio programs and so forth. She says that was just a testing program to eventually to where the government will actually be shipping you food. And we already know that this administration, supposedly, I don't know if they went through with it, was supposed to, you know, for those who get food stamps, there was going to be a certain amount of food delivery from the government to cut back on the dollars. And I don't know if that was ever passed, if they went through with it or not. So it kind of leads into this.
Well, which,
if they're trying to control a substance to what the people might get and so forth.
Well, this all comes in under the umbrella of this global agenda called the Codex Food Harmonization Code. Mm-hmm. Okay, so everything is going to be highly tracked, highly regulated, highly, you know, watched and distributed, and if you don't like this idea, I mean, now's the time. You know, this is how tyranny happens, when good people just don't stand up and say anything. You know, the problem is, I hear from people in other parts of the globe. They call me, like from New Zealand and Australia and the UK, Germany, Arab Emirates. They're having problems getting herbs for medicinal purposes to help them be well, and it's because of the European Union regulations. They have really tightened the noose on what you can have, and they have prohibited any herb formulas that have more than one herb ingredient in them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So one lady in Australia says we can't get any cleanses here. And I looked into this because they were asking, you know, can't you get your products on the market in Australia? So I looked into it. Oh my God. You have to hire a firm to navigate all the regulations and the approval process. It is a maze, and it costs you about $100,000 to submit one product, and there's no guarantee to get approved for market, because over there they consider your herb to be a drug.
Did you say $100,000?
$100,000.
Wow.
So,
and they talk about our regulations here.
Well, what I'm pointing out is what's across the pond usually comes here.
Exactly.
If we're going to let it happen, if you want more regulation, that's what's going to – so over there, she says, you know, if you have – she asked, do you have a vitamin shop? And I said, we got a couple of, you know, chain vitamin stores here, GNC, the vitamin shop, and some others. She says, well, over here, our equivalent vitamin shop, if you go in there, she says, you could get – sundry items, you know, shampoos and lotions and you know, chapstick and stuff. But she says everything else is pretty much for bodybuilders, like whey protein shakes and stuff like that. They don't have anything to help, you know, help them detox, to help improve immune system function from a medicinal level. They don't, you know, the herbal level. They don't have any of that. So fortunately, though, for the Australians at this juncture, they can order from us at Apothecary Herbs, but they have to order under a certain amount, and they pay, I think it's 10% duties and taxes on it when it gets there. Mm-hmm. So if they order under $800, they're still paying 10% on that $800 on their end. So, wow. Yeah, it's terrible. It's really bad. So I'm just letting people know, if you're going to be in the stores and you know, in a year from now or whatever, and you see that things aren't available, or if they are, they're really, really expensive, and you sticker shock. This is the reason. You know, this is the reason. So I implore everybody, you know, do your due diligence. If you like your supplements that you have right now on your kitchen counter, you want to continue to get them and have them available and affordable, you need to let the FDA know that you know what's going on and you don't like it one bit.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yes. What can you tell the listeners to do?
Well, contact the FDA. Now, if you're on Melanie's newsletter list, you'll get a hot link regarding the alert to close the FDA back channel, and you will just click that and just follow the instructions to type in, you know, your opinion on that, and it gets submitted to the FDA. They've arranged for all that for you, so you can do it on that website if you'd like, or you could go on the FDA's website and you can follow the instructions there, or give them a call and see what you could do. They may ask you to send something in writing, but it's just greed and control. It's what it is.
Absolutely. Do you have a phone number for the FDA or?
I don't. Yeah. Not for that particular petition, but you could probably just call their general number on the website and get it that way. Do your due diligence. Now's the time to. If you got an opinion, now's the time to say something. But in the meantime, if anybody wants a catalog from Apothecary Herbs, they can call 866-229-3663, 866-229-3663, or visit the website, thepowerherbs.com.
Thank you, Wendy. We're heading into a break here in just a few minutes. Let's see. I got distracted by someone calling me. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen, this is what happens when you're in live radio. Wendy, give out your contact information real quick, please.
866-229-3663, thepowerherbs.com. We'll talk to you later.
Bye.
We will find you acting on your best
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk CommonSenseTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com. That's dgscoins.com. And make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And let's go ahead and get started right away, Dave. The U.S. trade deficit, it did narrow for the month of November, and this is the first time after five straight months of increases as a shortfall with China and several other countries declined. Tightening the balance between imports and exports has been the major goal of President Trump, and the November gap closed to $49.3 billion from $55.7 billion in October. That's about an 11.5% decline, and it was largely due to a slide in imports, which fell 2.9% to $259 billion. Exports did edge a little bit lower, 0.6% drop. In all the year to date, goods and services deficit increased by $51 billion, a 10% rise for the same period in 2017. Same thing with exports, rose $157 billion or 7.3%, while imports gained $108 billion for almost 8%.
Yeah, on a broader level, Melody, the drop in the trade deficit will serve as a boost to fourth quarter GDP, which is now expected, or currently, I should say, expected to show about a 2.5% increase. That's according to the Atlanta Fed's GDP Now measure. And with that 35-day government shutdown, looking to have some level of noticeable impact, every little bit will help this time around. Now, how the trade tensions play out over a longer period obviously is unknown, as those talks continue ahead of a March 2nd deadline for imposition of another round of tit-for-tat tariffs. Among individual countries, the gap with China closed $2.8 billion to 35.4. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin this morning said that trade talks have been, quote, very productive. Time will tell, Melody.
Time will tell. And, we don't know. They're going to blame the shutdown. I don't know if the shutdown would have that type of an impact, but I could see a slowing of the economy. And a lot of things are, when's March 1st? With China?
Yeah, March 1st,
GM's profit, we talked a little bit about GM yesterday, how they were laying off some folks, and here's their fourth quarter operating profit dropped about 8%. Company said strong pricing on pickup trucks and their SUVs and crossover SUVs in North America drove results. A 25% drop in China sales during the quarter hurt the bottom line by about $200 million. So I guess China they don't buy that many American vehicles, but anything, I guess if whatever they stop buying certainly can hurt GM.
GM, yeah, they buy GM vehicles, but it's GM shares in general are up 17% this year through yesterday. Anyway, that was after the automaker last month gave a bullish outlook for this year, which surprised analysts.
Well, don't they all give a bullish outlook in the beginning of the year? Hey, well, it's going to be a great year.
Yeah, I know. I know. Some given expect, given likely results that GM showed, an 8% drop in profits, you know, you'd think that their outlook, at least what they were going to portray to analysts, would be, you know, slightly more in check, trying to, you know, manage expectations. But you know, hey, you know, it's all about good news, I guess, in the long run, and that's what you know, continues to prop up this crazy market. You know, last year GM shares dropped 18%, largely over the trade uncertainty and concerns about an eventual downturn in U.S. vehicle sales. Last year, GM blunted weaker sales in North America and China with stronger pricing in the U.S., where consumers paid, listen to this, it surprised me, nearly $37,000 on average for a GM vehicle in the fourth quarter. That's a record for that period. Now, maybe it's not so surprising when you think that the vast majority of those GM vehicles are SUVs. So GM expects its bottom line to rebound this year, partly driven by more than $2 billion in expected savings from, as you mentioned yesterday, cutting as many as 14,000 jobs, primarily in North America.
Well, you know, it's funny. It says consumers paid nearly $37,000 for the average GM vehicle. You mean they went in debt, $37,000. They didn't pay anything. They went in debt. $37,000 on average.
Well taken.
It's debt, ladies and gentlemen. But and you know, we often talk about, you know, we mentioned it yesterday that GM was always the way GM went, so goes our economy. I mean, it was a prime leading indicator of what our economy was doing. And you know, I'm not so, you know, I certainly don't think they have that same power as they did when that statement was originally followed and people paid attention to it. I think the housing market sort of replaced, I don't know if that's true or not, it's just my, you know, thoughts as far as so when you see the housing market drop like we've seen, again, these are signals that, you know, there's something going on far beyond all the great news we hear coming out of the financial news programs and, of course, out of the government reports. But
there's signals and they're flashing brightly.
Yes. Very, very brightly. And this is interesting. More than half, it's sad, more than half of U.S. farm households lost money farming in recent years. Now, this is according to the USDA, and it estimated that the median farm income for the U.S. farm households was negative almost $1,600 in 2018. Farm incomes had slid despite record productivity on American farms. Chapter 12 bankruptcy created during the 1980s farm crisis has allowed distressed family farmers or fishermen to devise a plan to repay creditors over 3 to 5 years. But only farms with debts that don't exceed about $4 million may file for this protection. So U.S. farm debt covering operations, land, equipment, livestock, and more last year climbed to more than $409 billion.
Yikes.
Yes, and that's the largest sum in nearly four decades and a level that hasn't been seen since the 80s. And when farmland values plunged and interest rates skyrocketed, boosting debts and pushing many farmers and lenders out of business.
Well, according to the Fed of Kansas City, Melody, nationwide, the volume of loans to fund current operating expenses of farms grew 22% in the fourth quarter from a year ago. That's hitting a quarterly record of nearly $59 billion. The average size of those loans rose to over $74,000, and that's the highest fourth quarter level in history when adjusted for inflation, again, according to the Fed. To stay in business, some farmers have sold their second homes that were purchased during a prosperous period earlier in the decade. They or their spouses have sought off-farm jobs to bring in additional income or pay for health insurance. Others have shrunk their operations, giving up rented ground or selling equipment to lower debt loads. Those struggling are driving consolidation, shifting a greater number of acres under fewer, larger, and in some cases, a lot more wealthy landowning farms. Nationwide Chapter 12 bankruptcy filings are below highs reached in 2010, but bankruptcies are climbing across large swaths of the Midwest that produce much of the nation's grain and meat, making up 48% of the total Chapter 12 bankruptcies in the nation versus just 37% a decade earlier. Wow.
You know, it's interesting in here. I saw where you had mentioned, or I heard that you had mentioned that these farmers were had great records back 10 years ago. If you go back 10 years ago, it means we were heading into the Great Recession.
Indeed.
So, and we had inflation was skyrocketing. And what's interesting, and so it's the timing is kind of strange that they were, reaching their peak at that point in time. That there was, they were very, but I have family members up in Pennsylvania that have dairy farms, and the regulations have gotten so strict, and their milk. I mean, half the time they have to throw away their milk.
Wow.
And the same thing has happened. They went in, things are good, they go out, they borrow money, they buy new equipment. Now they're sitting there with these huge, you know, because they grow the grains in order to feed the milking cows, the herd, the dairy herd. And now they're sitting with these huge machines. The herds are being almost cut in half. And because it's too expensive, and I mean, they really went out with all these. I mean, these cows have water beds to lay on. They do. They have heating blankets, you know, to make them all comfortable, so they produce the most milk possible.
It's and good. Sometimes it is good to be Elsie.
Yeah, I first time I heard them tell me water beds for cows. Are you kidding me?
Hey, I'm staying away from, the bovine romance angle. but I will say, you know, you think about the Amish, we'll call it the business model. Mm-hmm. I mean, for one thing, virtually all of them still use non-mechanized machinery, horse-drawn. Many of them engage their younger children. I see, on many a ride in the countryside where I live, children I would think are young teenagers. That's, if nothing else, cheap labor. It's, non-Amish farmers have a much more difficult time getting away with that kind of practice, but interesting stuff. It's
really?
It's challenging times for our farmers.
Yes, it is, and you have so many of these subsidies. The big farms getting the corporate farms are getting the subsidies and everything like that. This is what happens when you get a lot of you talk about regulation and government in your business. They just have a way of ruining it for the little guy, but. Here's something interesting. The White House today said that they're going to overhaul the payday loan regulation, unveiling a proposal to remove a lending requirement that would have made it difficult for companies to offer high-cost consumer loans. Now, this is the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. As part of the move, said it would postpone until, of course, after the election, 2020. November 19th, after the election. The date when the payday lending rule goes into effect. And of course, the rule was the first federal effort to regulate the short-term lending aimed at lower-income consumers and was set to go into effect in August. So the administration's proposal will now go through a fresh administrative process. It's going to take several months to complete. And of course, this is including the 90-day public comment period starting shortly, kind of like Wendy's, B6. They're actually, allowing 90 days open for public comment. So this announcement follows years of lobbying by payday and auto title lenders to block this payday lending rule.
Yeah, multi-hat wearer Nick Mulvaney, who's still director of this bureau as well as acting chief of staff at the White House, he's no dummy. So the timing, November 19th, very, very interesting, if transparent. Now, you know, the industries have said the regulation would wipe out their business by imposing onerous requirements to determine up front the likelihood customers can repay the loan. Oh, geez, that's such hardship. The Bureau is also reportedly concerned that these requirements would reduce consumers' access to credit and competition. Now, today's announcement could mark a period of uncertainty over the future of the small dollar industry. Consumer advocates have said they likely will seek legal action to block the changes. Industry says the loans provide much needed funds for consumers who couldn't otherwise borrow money to pay bills and cover emergencies. Consumer groups, on the other hand, have called for tough steps to rein in these payday loans, saying the high interest rates often force borrowers to roll over their loans repeatedly at crazy high costs. A typical two-week payday loan comes with a $15 fee for every $100 borrowed. It's 15%. And on top of that, it has an annual interest rate of nearly 400%. That's according to the CFPB. Wow! Non-deductible interest, I would imagine.
Yeah. No doubt. I mean, that's an extraordinary, but there is a lot of risk, and rates are charged according to risk.
Yeah.
And going in there, you know what you're going to have to pay and so forth. But I think a lot of these payday loans, I'm not sure, but I think a lot of this money can be sent, like if you have, illegal. No, I don't know if they're illegal, but they can send money. Whoever works here can send, whether they're legal, whatever. I'm not going into that debate. But you can send money over out back into Mexico and other countries, so that money isn't even staying here. They work here, they make the money here, but it goes back to their country. Mm. And again, it's not supporting. And I'm not sure if it was the payday loans. These companies that do that, where they bank wire it and so forth. And I know they tried at one point in time to put restrictions on wiring money to other countries to encourage that money staying here. And we're going to stay here for another 20 minutes, but first we have this break that we're heading into. So until we come back, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. Yeah, I stayed up last night to watch the speech. And, you know.
Speeches.
I did. I listened to and then some. And so it's been a busy day and hectic day and a long day here at Discount Gold and Silver.
A day of recovery.
I remember when I used to stay up that late that I was actually doing something fun.
I'm embarrassed to say I fell asleep during both the State of the Union and Stacey Abrams' response.
It was interesting. One thing, though, that I did catch, I talked about it this morning when I was on Beth Ann's program and the CSC Talk Radio. I thought it was interesting where President Trump said that he's meeting with the North Korean Kim Jong-un. Was it the 27th and the 28th, correct?
Correct.
Well, also today they announced that Michael Cohen, his testimony was once again changed to February 28th. So I thought, well, isn't that a nice little coincidence? So I'm not sure if this helps President Trump as far as, you know, because I don't know which is going to be focused on the most. Is it his meeting with Kim Jong-un in Vietnam? Or people just not going to care about Michael Cohen? I mean, it's behind closed doors anyway. But I thought it was interesting. So I don't know if, you know, they thought that perhaps by changing Michael Cohen, more people would focus on that and not him, not the president being in Vietnam. I mean, you could look at it both ways. I don't know which it is. I just found it interesting and not coincidence, and it's just not a coincidence. Michael Cohen goes to jail when? March 1st?
Right around then. I forget the date.
So there's not a whole lot of time for any follow-up. There's not a lot of time. I don't think they'll bring him out of jail to continue his testimony or whatever. You know, the news media is not going to be able to get to him. So I just thought it was interesting, and it's just like, that's just the way I think, ladies and gentlemen. So don't know who's behind it, but something was behind it in order to get his testimony changed to the same date that President Trump will be meeting Kim Jong-un. So, don't know how to read it. Just.
Or did the other come after? Was the meeting moved? Cohen's testimony moved was before they announced or settled on the dates of the summit.
It doesn't matter if it was moved or not. It's just that it's the same time, you know. So I just found it interesting that it's happening. That, you know, I don't know who was moved first or whatever. I'm assuming that the meeting with Kim Jong-un would have been prior to, you know, the meeting last night, unless they just came to the deal yesterday. But I don't know. It's just kind of interesting that it's happening at the same time, and Michael Cohen goes to prison shortly thereafter, a day or two later. So anyway, I'll let the listeners decide what you think. And the economy is slowing down. No one is sure by how much. And we've been talking about this all the time. It's harder than usual to determine for the U.S. because the 35-day shutdown is pushed back or halted important economic leases that did halt those important economic leases releases, I'm sorry. This week has already produced some less than stellar shutdown delayed data points. November reading of U.S. factory orders was down 0.6%, missing expectations by almost a full percentage point. November's durable good orders also missed economists' expectations by nearly a percentage point. And both of these surveys were released on Monday, 2 months behind schedule. And yesterday's reading on the health of the consumer sector, the ISM non-manufacturing index, was the lowest since July.
Yeah, employment rose, but business activity was 1.5 points lower. New orders fell to the lowest in 13 months, and new export orders fell 9 points to the lowest in 2 years, as we had mentioned earlier in the program. Lou Bryan of DRW Trading said, "It's possible that the economy weakened during the shutdown and the data that would have given us a heads up on the turn in the economy was unreported because of it." That is the shutdown. Consumer sentiment has been substantially weaker of late. And as Charles Schwab fixed income analyst Kathy Jones noted yesterday, it can take 3 to 6 months for economic data to catch up to sentiment. Jones said, the more the hard data softens or gets weaker, the more concerned we get, Melody.
You know, one of the biggest months, I believe, Dave, is December for the retail sales because you have all that holiday shopping in there. And the retail sales report for December, it tracks the health of the American consumer during this time. That isn't going to be released at all because of the shutdown. The advanced economic indicators report for November also have been canceled. New dates have yet to be announced for the advanced fourth quarter GDP. December personal income and spending data and the December international trade report. One analyst said we need more data and time to see if this is a wiggle or a new trend. You know, Dave, I also wonder, you know, get the people back to work. How hard is it? You know, how hard is it to figure out what these numbers are? It's all computerized. Shouldn't you be able to just type in some numbers and come up with these reports? All these departments should be able to come up with something. Anyway, it's just...
No, it's how they compile a lot of that data, yeah. I suspect, does take some manual actions by the person or teams that are... You know, that are working on it. I don't know how automated all of that reporting, the survey reporting is. You would hope largely, but.
Well, do you know what? Maybe they could work some overtime to get it done.
Hey.
You know, good grief. That way they could make up for the little bit of money that they lost and maybe had to go a little bit into debt. So, you know, it's the same old baloney, folks. You know, anything to keep everybody happy. Anyway, everybody uses emojis, right, Dave?
Well, I guess so. I'm trying to think of myself. I'm not a big emoji user myself, but I know a lot of my friends are. And you know, under the Unicode Consortium, which is in charge of emoji, has announced 59 new emoji along with 171 new variations on existing emoji. Hallelujah.
You know, a lot of our customers don't have, a lot of our listeners don't have computers.
Well, emoji are, you know, symbols, signs, photos of lots of different things, types of people, types of animals. But, you know, hearts, for example, smiley faces, in a move toward greater inclusion, the freshly finalized set of 2019 emoji addresses people with physical disabilities, covering mechanical arms and legs, sign language and hearing aids, and even the difference between manual and motorized wheelchairs. Now, the Unicode Consortium, gosh, I want to say unicorn, so much.
Well, you know, that's probably more appropriate.
Yeah. Well,
more appropriate.
They apparently heeded Apple's proposal last year to better represent people with disabilities And the newest Unicode emoji 12.0 announced today reflect that desire to the fullest.
Is this a government?
I mean, oh no, this is
Apple or a Department of Apple or what?
No, it's an independent entity. We'll call it. It's non-governmental. There may be government reps on it, as well as private sector reps. Mm-hmm. But it's not a government agency that I'm aware of, unless I can't imagine the nature of it has changed like that. Mm-hmm. But besides humans, the new emoji also broadened the range of other animals, like otters, orangutans, flamingos, and sloths, all making it in. And then on the mood front, there's now butter, garlic, onion, falafel, waffles, and ice cubes. More ominous additions include razors, axes, a drop of blood. In total, again, 59 new, 171 new variations on existing themes. So now, if you've been waiting to express yourself with a brown heart, Melody, this will be the year your wait comes to an end. The brown heart is in. As usual, the new emoji additions will take a few months to show up in consumer products, which means your monthly, bi-weekly, quarterly updates, your software. Today's announcement is merely to get the documentation in order. So then it'll be up to the software providers, Apple, Google, Samsung, and so on, to design their own takes on each emoji and implement those in their device interfaces. Or, as we like to call them, smartphones and computers.
It's amazing what people get paid for.
Indeed. Well. That, by the way, Melody, is this week's Brevity is Golden.
I guess somebody's got to do it, but, emojis. I remember when there was just the smiley face.
Life was so easier then.
And I remember when the smiley face first came out. When was it, the 70s? I don't even know. It could have been the late 60s, 70s. Could have been the late 60s.
Good questions.
I just thought it was the stupidest thing. Yeah. It's like, are you kidding me? Smiley face. And people would put this little smiley face. They'd sign their name, like correspondence when I was working at the bank. They put their little signature, then they draw a little smiley. And it used to drive me nuts. It used to drive me insane. It's just like, you got to grow up. Be an adult. We're working at a bank, and you're putting little smiley faces on your communications. I don't know. I guess maybe I was too old. I don't know, but it's now I use them. Now I use the smiley faces probably more than I did then. But anyway, Israel's going to have an election. It's scheduled for April 9th, and it will not turn on the usual issues, the security, economy, religious or social divisions. Instead, it's going to serve as a referendum on Netanyahu's fitness to continue serving as prime minister, with three corruption cases pending against him.
Bibi.
Thank you. Bibi has been in office for 10 straight years, and which is so long that many Israelis can hardly recall a different leader or leadership style. And is he a leader that he could pretty much do anything, but because of certain things that he has accomplished, they're just going to overlook?
Well, I'll tell you what, April's going to be a good
indicator.
A good time to see to what extent that holds true.
Yeah, and he's taking a bet by calling this early election. If the prime minister successfully renews his mandate before being indicted, a legal loophole will allow him to keep his job, even if he goes on trial. And it's pretty much. What they're saying here, that, President Trump can't be indicted while he is in office, pretty much the same thing. He's going to have to demonstrate, Bibi's going to have to demonstrate to voters that they prefer prefer him.
Indeed. And polls are showing that he's expected to win.
Yeah.
His Likud party, I saw in another article, seems to be topping pre-election preference surveys. But this time will be unlike the first two elections of his. He's going to have a challenger, Benny Gantz, who's a former chief of staff of the Israeli Defense Forces. He just announced his candidacy 2 weeks ago. So, you know, by serving such a long time in office, you know, Netanyahu's brought stability to Israel's fractured coalition system. Similar to England, they and other European countries, Israel runs on a, you know, a coalition of parties based on, I think, the proportion of popular vote they receive. In the first decade of the 2000s, Israel was led by three different prime ministers who presided over different coalition governments. Netanyahu's comeback after his unsuccessful first term as prime minister, which was from 96 to 99, and the rightward shift in Israeli public opinion, both those factors have made him popular as the elder statesman. So we will see, as Israel's economy has grown and unemployment reaching historic lows, Netanyahu appears closer than ever to achieving his lifetime goals.
All righty. Thank you, Dave. We're going to be back tomorrow. I'll be here with Butch Paul. Until then, be safe. Good night and God bless.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's too bad.